Izzy as a hibernating bear dragon. A Good Omens multi-voice potfic, written by The Wolf and voiced by
Sky Asimaru
and Chop. Part 3 of Fur and Feathers and Fantasy Fun. Summary. Two magic-using creatures, both alike in lack of dignity, in a cozy cave where we lay our scene. I.e., two desperate idiots take a hot minute to realize they want the same things.
How quickly does this need to get to Kindleend?
The merchant asked, eyeing the small parcel Crowley had handed to him dubiously.
Speed isn't an issue. Only the safe passage. It's got a tracker spell in there, so I'll know if anything happens.
When the merchant looked down at the parcel in alarm, Crowley winced and backtracked.
Look, it's a gift, all right? If it gets lost, I want to be able to find it, that's all.
It was, in point of fact, a rock that looked vaguely like a squash toad that he'd stuffed in a thin wooden box with some batting and wrapped in shipping burlap to discourage prodding. Imbued in the rock was a simple casting, linked with a not-so-simple timing spell. In about 3 weeks, the rock was going to turn a very pretty shade of blue, and then another color every day or so, until all the power-infused runes were consumed. Three more boxes with their own unassuming rocks, etched with ridiculous cantrips set to trigger with varying lengths of delay, were already trundling their way on other merchant carts to far-flung locals chosen by scattering pebbles over the four corners of a map. Let Liga and Hester have fun chasing their own tails for a while as they used their fancy crystal, or whatever it was they had to track Crowley's magical signature. By the time he'd smoothed things over with the merchant, Crowley was running late for his shift at the apothecary. He slithered in just as old Rupert was beginning to flip open the case of his timepiece.
I'm here. Sorry. Delay sending off some post. You know how it is. Inventory today, yeah? And then that big order of tinctures to send to the manor?
He asked, hopping the long counter and digging his work smock out from one of the myriad cubbies underneath. Old Rupert squinted at him, though it wasn't clear if he was miffed or just trying to see him better. An unfortunate experiment with a new recipe for a true sight elixir about a fortnight ago meant he pretty much daily weighed how irritating he found Crowley against his half-life of his temporary affliction. Crowley danced on the knife's edge of that wobbly regard. He had to get his kicks somehow if he was going to be stuck in mundane retail for the foreseeable future. Old Rupert was his third stint in completely non-magical part-time work in town, and he was about to go spare. He wondered if he would need to schmooze his way into a fourth, but that was a bridge best crossed if and when it appeared. After he'd finished up at the apothecary, he snacked a cheap dinner at the local pub and then made his evening trek into the old wood bordering the town. The long shadows cast by the mountains on either side of the valley meant even though sunset was still an hour away, it was already getting difficult to see by the time he made it to the clearing where Xerophil's cave entrance was hidden. He'd made the journey often enough by now, though, that the unnatural stillness of the far above canopy and the way the shadows turned almost indigo in the deepest parts didn't faze him. If something here was going to eat him, it would have done it by now. That, or the musty vanilla spice scent of Aziraphale's fur that always seemed to cling to him now, was a bloody good deterrent. He wriggled through the low entrance of the cave. Once he felt the subtle brush of Aziraphale's sword drape around him, comforting and familiar by now, he conjured a dim mage light to illuminate the space. At the far end of the cave, Aziraphale lay in the same position Crowley had left him in the morning, curled in his nest with his back to the entrance, snoring like a muffled, sleepy thunderstorm. By the cherub's own estimation, his hibernation period would be ending any day now. Crowley was taking it on faith, as he'd yet to figure out what exactly Aziraphale was hibernating through, or why.
Aziraphale?
He murmured hopefully, and tried not to be disappointed when the cherub's breathing didn't waver. With a dramatic sigh, he tore off his boots and set his back down in the nook by the cave entrance. Then he shuffled closer to the edge of the nest, where he kept a small stack of projects that were all that was standing between him and a level of boredom truly detrimental to his health. If he wasn't able to focus on finding new and exciting ways to throw the Divine Emperor and his lackeys off his magical scent, or banging his head against the long-term problem of permanently hiding himself from their attention, he'd probably do something daft, like saunter up to the Power Mad Despot's lair and demand answers. Of course, the moment he cracked open one of his notebooks to scribble down a few ideas he daydreamed while doing the mind-numbing work of herb inventory, he was hit with a wave of lassitude so acute he almost couldn't bring himself to jot down anything coherent. Behind him, Aziraphale slumbered on, peaceful and soft with his warm fur and feathers, and comforting bulk just begging to be flopped down against and snuggled into. His breathing was soporific, quiet noise. Crowley realized he'd already unconsciously slowed his own to match. He wanted to be annoyed at the temptation the cherub presented, but in truth, the real reason he wasn't going absolute batshit working easy part-time jobs for scratch and spending most of his time playing cuddle toy to a giant bear dragon eagle creature was this. He was tired. Down to his bones, he was tired. Every joint and sinew in his body ached with fatigue. Before everything had gone to shit, he'd lived his life fast and loose, and a lot more voluntarily hand to mouth than most sensible people would be able to tolerate. But as precarious as his position had always been, on the edges of whatever village or city he'd wandered into, constantly working his way up some social ladder or another, schmoozing and charming his way into inner circles and secrets and interesting-as-fuck innovations in magic and science, and whatever other topic struck his fancy, it had always been his choice. And, perhaps foolishly, even when the lifestyle wore him down from time to time, he always thought that when he really needed to slow down, or even stop a while, nothing serious would be standing in his way of doing so. But all that was before whatever it was that had drawn the Divine Emperor's attention onto him like a blistering spotlight. Before he'd had to cut and run from the city he'd barely established a toehold in and abandoned far too much in the chaotic process. And all that meant he'd started the game of cat and mouse with nothing in reserve. It had only been a little over a month of pursuit, of setting up temporary stakes and then having to pull them right back up as he was flushed out again and again across the sprawling territory of Dis. But it had taken a heavy toll. If he hadn't stumbled across Aziraphale's cave several weeks ago, and the literal physical and magical sanctuary it provided, he wasn't sure how much longer he would have lasted before he'd finally been run to the ground. So, after he forced himself to jot his few ideas down, just so they wouldn't melt right back out of his frizzled brain, he let himself close the journal back up and tuck it away. With relief, he stripped down to his underthings and crawled carefully along the edges of Aziraphale's nest until he reached the roughly crony-shaped hole between Aziraphale's chest and the back of the nest. A sliver of bedding that had remained reserved just for him from the minute the cherub had invited him to stay. With practiced ease, he stepped into the little crevice, hunkered down, and then squirmed his legs under Aziraphale's back paws and his torso up under the front one. Once properly engulfed, he burrowed close into the warm, spicy musk of the cherub's feathery fur. There was a little hollow beneath Aziraphale's chin that he'd squished a pillow into, and he buried his face in it now, butting the crown of his head up under the cherub's jaw in gentle grating. Aziraphale didn't wake fully, but he did take in and let out a longer breath than usual, and his limbs and tail shifted and cuddled Crowley closer. A feeling like someone pressing a warm hand to the center of his back brushed soft and sleepy against his mind, and then slipped away just as gently. Crowley let out a deep sigh of his own and closed his eyes so he could fully revel in the decadent feeling of being completely surrounded in softness and warmth. The entire bulk of Aziraphale's fangs and claws and magic positioned between him and the rest of the world. This was about all the company Aziraphale had been able to offer him in the past several weeks after their initial meeting, but Crowley was absolutely not complaining. The mystery of Aziraphale's friendship and how they might get on once he woke for good was one Crowley was content to let wait. In the meantime, he was going to appreciate every last drop of unlooked-for comfort and safety for all he was worth. And when the cherub was reliably conscious again, Crowley was prepared to do a whole hell of a lot to hold on to his enviable position as prize cuddly toy. By then, he should be well rested for it. The evening, Crowley crawled into the opening of the cave and found Aziraphale's nest empty. He swore his heart stopped beating for a full 10 seconds. For a horrible moment, all he could see was the absence. No great soft bulk for him to curl up safe beneath. No bellowing breaths like inland waves drowning out the noise of the forest outside. No ambient warmth and presence. But then he realized the subtle whisper of the cherub's camouflaged wards still hung like draperies on the cave walls. And the nest itself was neatly made up, extra blankets folded and pillows stacked along the edges. Probably not abandoned, he rationalized, just stepped out for a moment. Hopefully. Swallowing down his panic, Crowley turned around and wriggled his way back out of the cave again. The clearing immediately surrounding the cave remained empty, and a quick circuit of the edges didn't reveal any obvious points where a great, hulking mass of bear chicken lizard may have passed through. He clenched and unclenched his hands uselessly at his sides as he tried to think. About a dozen different spells came to mind, but he didn't dare risk it outside the safety of the cave's wards, not without knowing it would be worth the inevitable attention it would draw. The last of the evening light was rapidly fading, and the moon was only a thin crescent tonight. Not that he was eager to go tramping through the old wood with its creepy noises at night in the first place.
Oh, damn it, Aziraphale, where'd you go?
He muttered to himself. A large foot-stamping part of him wanted to throw his head back and just yell for the big fluffy bug, but making a lot of noise in a forest as old and dark as this was just asking to be eaten by something, or someone.
Crowley!
The pleased voice sounded like it was coming just from over his right shoulder, but when he spun around, there was nothing there.
Oh, it is so strange to see you up and about. Hold on, dear. You're straining your neck whipping it around like that. I'm almost there. Just wait a moment.
It was Aziraphale, of course. His voice rang immediate and fussy in Crowley's mind. Annoyed, Crowley thought,
"Where the hell are you?"
Very loudly in the metaphysical direction of the voice.
Oh, that was rude, whatever that was. I'm afraid this isn't a two-way link, my dear. I'm merely projecting in such a way that I know your magic can receive. That was a jolly good attempt on your part, though. I might be able to teach you the trick of it in time.
Crowley scanned the edges of the clearing and scowled. He was tempted to keep blasting rude thoughts Aziraphale's way, but held off. For all they'd been nestmates for going on 2 months, they'd only shared a scant handful of conversations together. He didn't want to wear out his welcome before he'd had a chance to give his full pitch for why they should keep sticking together. Sure, he'd already technically, accidentally, proposed marriage and had his suit accepted, but he wasn't going to rest on his laurels, not when Aziraphale seemed so laughingly inclined to treat the whole thing as the absurd misunderstanding it was. Twigs didn't break, and dry leaves didn't crunch. Suddenly Aziraphale was just there, stalking into the clearing from between 2 trees, not nearly wide enough to have been hiding him. Crowley flinched away from the sudden appearance and, by reflex, smothered the gesture under a dramatic wave of his arms.
Excuse me for being a little alarmed at coming back to find you gone without a trace.
The short, feathered crest that ran down the length of Aziraphale's spine fluffed up into anxious points.
Oh, my dear, I am so sorry. I did mean to be back earlier than this, but I was peckish, and it took a while to find lunch. And then I didn't want to come back empty-handed, either. I know you're probably eating in one of the nearby humanoid settlements. It certainly doesn't smell like you've been bringing back fresh kills to the cave, anyway. But I did feel a tad guilty. My nap took a few days longer than expected.
He shifted his weight on huge tail and paws like a nervous horse, and Crowley realized there was a pile of limp, feathered bodies between Aziraphale's feet.
Oh,
Crowley thought, brain stuttering out for a moment in bewildered pleasure before jolting back to the present. Aziraphale was still babbling. Something about fish?
Aziraphale,
Crowley said, sharp enough to cut through the tumble of words, but he hoped the fond smile tugging up one side of his mouth kept it from stinging.
Listen to me.
Aziraphale grumped and sat down on his haunches with a small huff. He looked a lot more dragon-like this way, with his knees sticking up and framing his torso like chunky wings, and his tail curled primly in front of his toes. Crowley resisted the urge to cross his eyes and see if he could coax a more bearish impression to the fall. He knew he'd get used to his form in time, but for the moment his brain was still valiantly trying to draw comparisons to beasts he'd either seen in person or, reliably, reproduced in art.
You brought back dinner?
Oh, yes,
Aziraphale said, tone heavy with relief to be thrown the conversational rescue line, and perked back up. He scooped the birds up to his chest with his paws, and then stood up on his hind legs to walk toward Crowley. And, yep, all right, there was the bear coming through. A little awkward and shambling, but definitely a proper walk. Crowley bit down on the stressed sound his brain was trying to use as a pressure release to cope with how really fucking weird cherubs were. He accepted the dead birds numbly as he contemplated how Aziraphale's soft, feathery fur thinned away into pale white scales running down the center of his belly. The scales peeked through over an area that was almost the exact inverse of what Crowley was slightly furred from chest and to groin. Except where Crowley had dangly bits, Aziraphale just had the shadowed impression of a vertical indent. Handy that, if you weren't inclined to clothing. It wasn't that he was trying to ogre the cherub, but even though Crowley was relatively tall for a human, his face was about level with the middle of Aziraphale's belly. Aziraphale seemed to realize how awkward that was and folded up his long legs to sit again, bringing his head about level with Crowley's chin. He peered up at Crowley from under his eyebrow ridges.
Is this enough for you, for supper? I've been observing humans for quite some time, but not from close enough to be certain of, portion sizes.
Crowley tore his eyes away from luminous hazel eyes and considered the birds lying limp in his arms. There were three of them, all pheasants, and plump at that.
Yeah, more than enough.
Crowley'd already eaten in the village, but like hell was he going to turn down a gift like this?
Let me get a fire started.
In the end, at Aziraphale's insistence that he could handle a small preservation spell, Crowley only roasted one of the birds. He ate what he could under Aziraphale's preening supervision. But he wasn't much of an eater when he wasn't using his magic very often.
Don't make yourself sick, you ridiculous thing.
Aziraphale scoffed gently when Crowley contemplated a morsel of meat for a moment too long. He held out a paw for the carcass.
I can always fetch you more later.
Crowley whipped his head around and stared. That sounded an awful lot like Aziraphale was expecting them to stay together for the foreseeable. Aziraphale blinked huge, eerie eyes at him and then plucked the partially eaten bird from his grasp, tipped his head back, and tossed the whole thing down like he was popping a sweetmeat. The crunch of tiny bones as Aziraphale swallowed was not the most inspiring sound for Crowley's uncomfortably stuffed belly, but he swallowed tight and supposed he should get used to it.
What are you planning to do now?
He asked, going for casual, but landing somewhere in the realm of accusatory. Aziraphale blinked at him rapidly for a moment, and then began inspecting his talents.
Oh, well, I suppose I'm not sure yet. I'd only barely arrived in the region before I had to prepare to hibernate. I might travel a bit, get the lay of the land, figure out where I might fit in among so many, humans.
He flicked a glance at Crowley and then contemplated the fire.
Or if that's even possible.
Crowley winced.
Not many non-humanoids living west of the Skybreak Mountains. Further south, maybe. Beyond the drylands. Doesn't mean you can't make a space for yourself here. It might just be a bit of extra work.
He scrubbed his fingers clean with a handful of sweet-smelling leaves, and then tossed the leaves into the fire as he tried to piece together the right words that would let him offer to help, be a guide, or companion, or whatever was needed, without looking either desperate or deeply condescending. Before he could, Aziraphale straightened upright, crest stiffening.
I say, whatever happened to those nasty brutes who were hunting you? And why were they after you?
Crowley scowled.
Those were lackeys for the Divine Emperor. And if I knew why he had an interest in me, I'd quit doing whatever it was. Sharpish. No one with any sense wants to tangle with his court. But they, haven't been back. Your wards are top-notch.
Oh, thank you. And I'm glad they were able to offer you a bit of sanctuary, however unusual. From what I've observed, most humans are fond of a freestanding structure for shelter, and not a cave. I've not heard of this divine emperor before, but I can only imagine how loath you are to meet him if you thought sharing a cave with a strange cherub would be a friendlier alternative.
Too late to scare me. Not now I've seen you drool.
Oh, I do not!
But you're not wrong. He's a problem. And now I'm pretty sure his lackeys have some sort of artifact doohickey keyed into my magic signature. That's why they keep finding me.
Oh, this isn't the first time you've run from him?
I think this was the fourth, or maybe fifth village I'd tried to set up shop in. I've been getting by while you've been asleep, doing non-magical jobs, but it's... I can't not do magic. It's too much a part of me.
Of course. What are you planning to do now?
He countered, and of course he managed to make it sound gentle and diffident. Crowley scowled and then blew a heavy breath out through his lips until they buzzed.
Keep running? I don't know that I have much choice. If I can keep ahead of them, eventually they'll have to give up, yeah?
One would hope.
Aziraphale shifted and resettled, feathers briefly floofing and tail twitching as he recrossed his paws.
Is there... I mean, I don't wish to presume, but... And it's not as though we knew each other very well.
Just spit it out.
Crowley broke in, not unsympathetically.
Is there something I could do to help with your situation?
White, strange eyes gleamed in the firelight as Aziraphale stared at him with a stiff, avenging posture of a stone-carved beastie guarding the entrance to something hallowed. Crowley stared back, tongue thick in his mouth and throat unaccountably tight. Here was the perfect opening. He could just ask. All he had to do was say the words, in the breezy sort of tone that would signal he was only half serious, giving Aziraphale an out, if it was an overstep. Maybe make a joke about honoring marriage vows. A gobble of half-formed protest and entreaties churned in his mouth, and he could feel his face doing something stretched and likely stupid-looking.
It is something to think about,
Aziraphale rushed to add, and then popped up onto all four paws, not unlike a spooked cat.
I'll leave you to it. I find myself in need of a ramble after all that time cooped up. No need to wait up on my account to retire for the night.
Crowley found himself leaning back slightly in the face of the almost manic tone of Aziraphale's voice. At the mention of sleep, he couldn't help but glance over at the cave entrance. Aziraphale followed his gaze.
Oh, of course you're welcome to keep using my nest. I wouldn't dream of putting you out on such short notice. Terribly rude, especially as your husband.
A strange squeaking growl rumbled in his throat before he coughed and twitched his thick tail across the forest floor.
Thanks,
Crowley replied faintly, not quite sure what to do with a deadly-looking fur lizard creature who was giving every impression of an awkward host stumbling over a bit of tricky hospitality decorum. Which was fair, Crowley supposed, if you took several large steps back and squinted. But the word had barely finished leaving his mouth before Aziraphale was suddenly just gone. Not even a glint of pale feathers and fur shone in the weak light of the fire held up against the smothering dark of the woods.
Well, that was a thing.
Crowley muttered to himself and, lacking anything better to do, set about safely smothering the fire so he could retreat to the cave and hope things would make more sense in the morning. Once back in the cave, the new routine of getting ready to bed down for the night took over, and Crowley passed through the motions of dressing down and scrubbing his face and hands passably clean by easy road. But once he turned toward the nest, he froze. He was struck, now that it was empty of its usual cherubic occupant, by how big it was. A person could get swallowed up in such an expanse of cushions and blankets. He blew a sharp breath out through his nose to try and dispel the silly apprehension trying to gain a foothold in his mind. When you got right down to it, it was just a fuck-off big bed. Nothing scary or melancholy about it. And with that firmly decided, he stomped over the edge and across the wide space to his normal spot. Or tried to stomp. It turned into more of a swaying, cursing affair with how much the surface gave on each step. Grumbling, he flopped down and pressed his face into his pillow, as usual. The familiar scent and texture worked like a panacea, and he felt all his stiff angles start to slowly melt into their typical languid semi-sprawl. More of a true sprawl, he realized, now that there weren't any massive limbs bundling him into a more manageable shape. After a few minutes of closed eyes and steady breathing, he frowned and curled his limbs in. Felt a bit weird to be that sprawled out, actually. Toes were getting cold, too, without a pair of heat-radiating cherub thighs to tuck them between. After a restless moment, he sighed and pushed himself up enough to grab one of the folded blankets and wrap it firmly around his legs and feet, then another to tuck around his shoulders. He curled his arms in tight, so the blanket pulled taut across his back in a poor approximation of a hulking, furred limp. He then spent longer than he probably should lying there, wrapped up in blankets, and desperately burying his nose in their spicy, musky scent, before he acknowledged his fatalistic despair that he wasn't going to be able to fall asleep. All the gods above, help him. It had only been a couple months, but he'd been ruined for sleeping alone. Or maybe simply the singular sense of safety he'd felt while sleeping with the Zebrafear. His hindbrain couldn't settle enough without all that comfortingly terrifying bulk and claws and teeth and spooky invisibility thingy guarding his back.
Oh, shit,
he whispered to himself. In lieu of anything better to do, he started rehearsing speeches in his head, lining up arguments for why they should travel on from this cave together. They could work out a mutual beneficial arrangement. A Zebrafear could help with any immediate magical needs and maybe help him brainstorm a more permanent solution to his problem. And Crowley could act as a local guide if needed, or mediator with humans if worse came to worst. It shouldn't lock up his chest so tight to think of how the conversation might play out. He talked himself into more one-sided partnerships with far less willing people scores of times. Zebrafear had offered to help, had opened not just his temporary home, but his literal bed to Crowley on nothing more than 2 minutes' awkward acquaintance, and Crowley's desperate, ham-fisted attempts at persuasion. He had no real reason to think that Zebrafear would turn him down, except that he was keenly aware how devastated he would be if it all didn't work out. He hadn't felt this invested in another person's regard in an age, and he'd forgotten how bloody terrifying the feeling was.
Crowley,
Zebrafear called, magically thrown voice bright and sudden in his ear. Crowley yelped and thrashed helplessly in the tangle of blankets before his reason caught up with a startle reflex.
What?
He demanded stridently and then cringed in delayed mortification.
Terribly sorry, my dear boy. It just occurred to me how cold it must be for someone without a pelt, and I worried you might be cold. Are you cold? Of course you must be, without even a fire. Here, I'll just...
And then Crowley heard the faint rustling of leaves and a woofing snort of air at the entrance to the cave. He craned his neck around just in time to see a Zebrafear shaking his feathers back to rights just inside the cave. Once again, Crowley actively set aside trying to figure out the logic of how a creature that big could get in and out of a hole that small so easily, never mind without damaging the thick cluster of bushes that obscured the entrance. It made his brain hurt, and so it was yet another upsetting fact about cherubs that he shoved into a closed-lidded box labeled Magic Bullshit and ignored for now. Zebrafear didn't have true ears, but he did have some overlong tufts of feathers clustered above his ear holes that would twitch and quiver occasionally, and they did so now, straining in his direction.
Oh, good. You've taken some blankets. I suppose, is that enough? Are you warm?
Crowley blinked and then shook his head silently a couple times before he managed to blurt.
No! Freezing over here. It's a drafty bastard of a cave. Don't know how I'll be able to sleep at this rate.
Oh, well then, in that case...
Xerophil said eagerly and minced across the floor so he could delicately step into the nest one paw at a time, like a prissy cat. Crowley realized his mouth was stretched in a truly mortifyingly dopey smile, and he buried his face back in the pillow in self-defense. He couldn't help the huff of laughter that escaped, though, when he was shortly scooped back against the Xerophil's broad chest and cuddled close like a beloved stuffed toy.
There. Is that better? Comfortable?
Xerophil asked, voice low and purring in the back of Crowley's mind.
Yeah, much better.
Crowley mumbled and butted his head up against the underside of the cherub's jaw like usual.
You humans are so fragile.
Xerophil murmured back and gave Crowley a gentle squeeze.
And I do worry about you, Crowley.
Yeah? You barely even know me.
Crowley said before his brain could catch up with his mouth. What the hell was wrong with him?
Oh, perhaps not the little details, but I think I have a clear measure of your character. Persecuted for reasons unknown, alone and lonely in the world, and yet still so fair-minded and kind, ready to barter with and befriend a strange creature that could, and please do excuse me, squash you like a bug.
Oi!
And your magical aura, so bright and tart. Simply lovely. Perhaps humans regard one another along different scales, but I'm afraid as a cherub, my mind is already quite made up. I'm invested, and so I worry.
You can keep me, if you want.
Xerophil growled low in his chest, and curled in around him, impossibly closer. The vibrations along Crowley's spine made every hair on his body stand on end, and he went embarrassingly limp in Xerophil's very literal clutches. His stupid lizard brain didn't seem to have any hang-ups about baring his tender underbelly, even if his higher reasoning was still spitting faulty sparks as he tried to articulate more and better words. Suave words. Words that contained even an ounce of dignity. He managed and groped about until he was able to clutch at Xerophil's paws and encourage them to press tighter against his chest, over his pounding heart and anxiously wheezing breaths.
You did already propose?
Xerophil said, a charged moment later, voice a little breathless sounding for all he wasn't using any breath to speak. Crowley barked a laugh.
I thought you weren't going to hold me to that.
Seriously, in the name of any deities listening, what the bloody fuck was wrong with him?
Not unless you want me to,
Xerophil replied, tone settling into something more assured and cheeky. He nuzzled his snout down and around the back of Crowley's head and swiped the tip of his great, rasping, wet tongue along the side of Crowley's neck. Crowley was not proud of the noise he made, or how ready certain parts of his body were to jump to attention, given he wasn't sure exactly how it was intended, and because, in all honesty, how objectively gross it was, given how sticky damp his neck was left feeling.
How about we stick together and see what happens?
He said, voice a little strained. Just when you thought you knew yourself and the world, a fussy dragon bear came along and knocked you for six.
I can be your guide for this side of the mountains, show you around, answer questions, be agreeable company.
Aziraphale was back to nuzzling the crown of his head. Based on the occasional tug against his scalp, Crowley thought he might even be nibbling on his hair.
I would like that very much. And that way I can help if those nasty men show up again. And perhaps I could find a way to fashion a portable ward you could wear, so it would be safe for you to do your magic again.
Sounds good.
Crowley croaked out, not sure what emotion within the tangle of benign horror, surprise lust, terrified affection, and profound relief was going to win out before he fell asleep. Because sleep, inexplicably, was creeping up on him, now that he was wrapped up and warm and no longer plagued with the question of what he was going to do next. Cuddle toy and tour guide and possible husband to a bloody terrifying and inexplicable magical beast, it looked like. And that was enough for now. More than enough. The end.